This is Ozarks at Large for Tuesday, September 17th, 2013. I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
And I'm Kyle Kellums. Ozarks at Large is sponsored in part by the University of Arkansas Women's Giving Circle, whose mission is to transform and expand women's giving to university programs and research through a collective voice. Season tickets are available to the Fort Smith Symphony Special 2013-14 90th Anniversary Concert Season. Works by Rachmaninoff, Tchaikovsky, Mozart, Beethoven, and Wagner highlight the season, as well as an evening with the Canadian Brass. Tickets and more information available at 452-7575 or fortsmithsymphony.org.
Ahead on this edition of Ozarks, increasing internet access for Arkansans. The state ranks 48th with people with access to the internet, but there's a group of people looking to change that.
Plus, two legislators talk about an approximately $53 million deficit for the public school employees' health plan, and the Butler Center releases the Encyclopedia of Arkansas Music and more.
But first, as rescue operations continue in Colorado to save the lives of flood victims, Arkansas Red Cross officials have been deployed to aid residents. Bridget Williams with the Red Cross says disaster responders from Arkansas will be in Colorado for several weeks to help people cope with the trauma.
Arkansas was put on alert Friday, and as of this weekend, their primary request was for mental health workers, and we have sent five. And we still have other specialties on standby to go as needed.
Williams says the mental health workers, some of whom are volunteers, will provide crucial counseling for flood victims.
What they will be doing is to help individuals cope with the trauma that they are still undergoing. But then they will also help them make the process of beginning recovery to try and minimize the sense of being overwhelmed. And they will be, if you will, a guide for them to get them back emotionally on their feet.
Williams says the mental health workers will counsel residents and help them get back on their feet emotionally so they can recover from the natural disaster that has so far damaged or destroyed 19,000 homes.
A company is considering building a new pipeline through Arkansas. Magellan Midstream Partners yesterday said it has started a 30-day period to assess customer interest. Roby Brock with Talk Business Arkansas notes it comes after a major oil spill in the spring.
While the Pegasus pipeline rupture in the Mayflower area has been pretty high profile, this new Magellan pipeline project proposal could actually serve another need in the region. Back in May, earlier this spring, Houston-based Enterprise Product Partners announced plans to cease providing jet fuel by pipeline to Little Rock and to parts of Jonesboro up in northeast Arkansas, and other types of fuel as well. That's a move that has threatened fuel sources for a lot of aviation and some trucking interests in Arkansas. This new pipeline might actually meet some of their customer needs.
Interested customers must submit binding commitments by the end of the day, October 16th.
Several school elections are taking place today, including one in Prairie Grove. The school district is seeking a $6 million increase to replace facilities that Prairie Grove Superintendent Alan Williams says are beyond upgrading. Other school elections are taking place in Bentonville and West Fork, each of which is asking for millage increases for facilities construction. But school board elections are happening in other school districts. If you're unsure of where your polling place is, visit the Arkansas Secretary of State's webpage at voterview.org.
With the onset of fall comes the inevitable turnover of Beaver Lake, leaving water customers across northwest Arkansas with that familiar, if not friendly, taste of the season. According to the Beaver Water District, turnovers happen when the temperatures drop, causing surface water on the lake to cool. When that occurs, the cooler surface water settles to the lake's bottom, causing the lake water to mix from top to bottom. When that happens, more organic compounds like those generated from algae growth are introduced into the water supply. Officials with the Beaver Water District say although the water may smell or taste a little odd, it is still safe to drink.
The University of Arkansas in Fayetteville has chosen a former power company executive to fill a new position in the university's Division of Finance and Administration. Timothy O'Donnell, former treasurer and vice president of Southwestern Energy Company, has been hired as associate vice chancellor for budget and financial planning, effective October 7th. O'Donnell's hiring comes after a national search that started in July. He will report to vice chancellor for finance Don Peterson and will be tasked with enhancing the university's budgeting processes and implementing improvements to budget controls.
With the annual Bikes, Blues, and Barbecue happening this week, the Fayetteville Police Department is informing the public about potential traffic changes in the downtown Fayetteville area. At this point, the police department does not plan to close Dixon Street or West Avenue to vehicle traffic on Wednesday or Thursday, but will reevaluate the situation if motorcycle or pedestrian safety becomes an issue. According to the department, closures on the two streets will begin as public safety dictates. Closures on Dixon Street will extend from St. Charles to Arkansas Avenue, and West Avenue will initially be closed between Spring and Watson Streets. But as the rally progresses, the closures will be extended to North Lafayette Street. Additionally, electronic signs will be in place along College Avenue to inform motorists which lanes are for event traffic in an effort to ensure smooth traffic flow.
By order of President Obama, all flags are to be flown at half-staff from today through sunset on September 20th. The proclamation was made in response to the shootings yesterday at Navy Yard in Washington, D.C.
Mostly cloudy tonight, lows from 65 to 69 throughout the region. Mostly sunny tomorrow, though there is a slight chance of showers. Highs tomorrow in the upper 80s in northwest Arkansas, lower to mid-90s for the Arkansas River Valley. Tomorrow night, partly cloudy, lows from 66 to 69.
According to Talk Business Arkansas, Governor Mike Beebe says there will have to be consensus from legislators before he'll call a special election. But two key lawmakers say they're unsure a solution will emerge before January 1st, when teachers could face major premium hikes. Legislators learned last week that the public school employees' health plan was running a roughly $53 million deficit. Teachers are facing premium increases as high as 48% by January 1st of 2014. Appearing on KARK's Capitol View Sunday, Republican State Representative Alan Kerr of Little Rock and Democratic State Representative Greg Letting of Fayetteville discussed the issue with Roby Brock from our content partner Talk Business Arkansas and his co-host David Goins.
The teacher insurance situation, obviously this kind of just ballooned this week, with the big rate hike we saw in the late part of August. I guess, you could anticipate this happening. What's kind of your estimation on A, where we are, and B, does anything get done before next February?
I guess I'll jump in on that.
Jump in.
With respect to Senator Rapert and his request, I don't know that we're going to be ready to do anything before next January. Mainly we'd like to look at the benefits. I'm in the insurance business, and I can tell you that price is always driven by benefits as well as anything else. I mean, of course there's a rate issue out there, and I don't want the teachers to pay any more than their fair share, but at the same time, it may be time to look at their benefit level and make some adjustments there in order to help their rates. And it may be something that we need to consider a combination of rates and a combination of the state of Arkansas coming in and putting some money into that situation.
Representative Letty?
I'd agree that most legislators are still trying to find their feet on this issue and learn more about it. I know it caught a few off guard, although I don't really know that it should have. I think there was a meeting late last year where we talked about this. Just a couple of months ago, the General Assembly had to commit $8 million to shore up the program through the end of the year. And I think we want to make sure that we don't just throw money at the problem and that we come up with a long-term solution. And that's probably going to take time. I'm confident that we can come up with that solution. Whether or not it happens before January, I don't know.
If it doesn't happen before January, then you're going to be dealing with some pretty angry teachers who are going to get hit with those premium increases. I know I've heard from a lot of them on Twitter and Facebook and just through email this past week. Are you prepared for that political onslaught? Because if you don't solve this problem before the first of the year, it's going to hit some people pretty hard. 50% premium increases is big.
Right, and as has been pointed out, open enrollment begins October 1st. If we don't have the beginnings of an answer in place, you might see teachers begin to leave that plan. So participation rate, which is already kind of low, is going to continue to decrease, which is only going to make the problem worse. My hope is that we can at least have, if not an answer in place by the end of the year, the framework of one, and they know that we're headed in a good direction.
That's correct, and I've been getting a lot of calls myself, a lot of angry teachers a lot of them are starting to look at individual plans, taking out individual plans, maybe Blue Cross or QualChoice. Those are still available, and maybe a interim solution for them until we can shore up the situation. Cost is a lot of times driven by the pool and the pool of people being insured. Mm-hmm. And you know, if you're a healthy person, a lot of times getting an individual plan is much less expensive than a group.
Yeah, and I don't, you know, I don't get a sense that anyone can necessarily be surprised, like you mentioned, because the legislature did kind of, you know, throw some money at this during the session. But were you at all surprised with, I guess, the amount of, you know, reaction just within the last couple weeks, or did you anticipate this coming, Representative Kerr, as far as?
Oh, yes. I mean, when you raise anybody's premium 50%, they're going to start making phone calls, I mean, whether they're teachers or not. So any group would have this same reaction, but 50% is probably one of the largest increases I've ever seen on a group plan, especially one this large. Mm-hmm. Again, we probably need to take a look at, for immediate action, take a look at maybe adjusting some benefits, which in itself will drive that rate down.
But that immediate action is January, February. That's what we're talking about, timing-wise?
Right. Yeah. Okay. But, I mean, if we've got a plan in place, if we can look at the benefit package and take a look at some of these plans for deductibles, co-pays, things like that, a lot of times, just $10 or $15 difference on a copay makes a huge difference in the rate.
Representative Letting, do you see the governor has suggested he'd be open to a special session, but only if there's a consensus that's already been built for this. Do you think that there's some interest from legislators to get a solution in place in time to do a special session, which would happen before January?
I do think if we can come to that consensus and we have a plan that fixes the problem and make sure that we get it right, I think that's important. We don't want to just throw money at it. We don't want to be dealing with this a year down the road. We want to make sure we get it right. I think if we can come to consensus on that, it is possible we could see one. I don't know that the governor's still going to want to call a special session. We know how expensive those are, but he did make clear when he spoke in Fayetteville earlier this week that he would do that so long as we had a plan in place, but it's going to have to be something that we get in there and get out and that we're not there for a long time.
Can you only formulate this plan while, you know, the education committee is meeting, or like when does, you know, if we got legislators all throughout the state, how do you formulate this plan?
Well, I know we've had a number of members that have already had a number of meetings with people, the Department of Education, trying to learn about the issue and formulate a plan. I know the Republicans have been doing the same. I know the governor has been meeting with lawmakers. I think there are a number of ideas out there. The governor, I think, released yesterday that he's going to unveil some possible options next week.
Right.
I think you'll see this thing pick up.
In the last 20 seconds, I mean, special session, yes, no, maybe.
I don't see it happening, but if we come to a consensus, I'd be for it.
Believe it or not, I agree with Representative Letting. I really don't see a special session happening. I think we can come to an agreement and make some adjustments with what we have to head off the impending increase.
Absolutely.
That was Republican State Representative Alan Kerr of Little Rock and Democratic State Representative Greg Letting of Fayetteville, speaking with Roby Brock from our content partner Talk Business Arkansas and his Capital View co-host David Goins. Capital View airs at 8:30 Sunday mornings on KARK Channel 4 in the Central Arkansas market. You can hear more from this conversation at talkbusiness.net. Support for Talk Business Arkansas on Ozarks at Large is provided by Mitchell Williams Law, providing strategic counsel on a variety of sophisticated legal matters since 1954. Mitchell Williams Law Firm combines decades of diverse professional experience to clients across the U.S. Today, the firm employs nearly 80 attorneys from 4 offices in Arkansas, Texas, and New York. Online at MitchellWilliamsLaw.com.
And Bank of the Ozarks, committed to helping business owners succeed by combining the tools and services businesses need with accessible experience and knowledge. More information at BankOzarks.com. And the Electric Cooperatives of Arkansas. Diversity is the key to reliability and affordability. From the state's largest industrial user to a home at the end of a long country road, the Electric Cooperatives of Arkansas serve members with a stable supply of electricity backed up with fuel diversity. More at AECC.com.
This is Ozarks at Large. Most of us expect it to be there when we want it, and even get frustrated when it doesn't work properly or fast enough. The internet. According to a report last month by the Pew Research Center, 20% of Americans aren't connected at all, with Arkansas ranked 48th in the nation for people with access to the internet. Ozarks at-large Christina Thomas takes a closer look at how this affects the education of Arkansans and possible measures to remove the barriers to connectivity.
According to last spring's TEDx Fayetteville talk by Rebecca Miles and Javier Reyes, 30% of Americans complete a four-year college degree in 4 years, yet just 20% of Arkansans do the same. And just 14% of Arkansans have a college degree. More and more people are forced to get college degrees whether they want to or not. It's now the barrier to obtaining most professional careers, says Dr. Rebecca Miles.
If I have children or I live in a small town where I can't move to get a college degree, I'm not able to get that degree that allows me either entry to a job or a better salary to the job that I want to have. Technology allows people, if we put all the pieces together, to stay in their hometown and still get that same college degree without having to move to Fayetteville or wherever else they might want to move. So it allows me to learn, move ahead, keep pace with my peers both locally and nationally if I have access and get the education that I want.
Miles is a management professor at the University of Arkansas. There's also a direct correlation between education and economic development. It starts with education, providing a base for entrepreneurship and setting up new jobs and allowing individuals to recognize opportunities. Dr. Javier Reyes is the Vice Provost for Distance Education at the University of Arkansas's global campus.
Being now that we have the technology to disseminate education through online media in a way that it's effective, that has the quality that you want to have, and now it can have the reach that you currently couldn't have with a face-to-face environment, that is what the correlation is. You're going to be able to have a higher number of educated population in order to be able to have a higher impact in economic development. Now, it's not only about the four-year degree, it's not only about the associate degree, it's also about certificate, it's also about training programs. So that's what I think it's the correlation that exists between more technology, more connectivity, and have a highly educated population.
For Miles, education means three things. If one has a college education, they are more likely to encourage their kids to go, a sort of pay it forward. Second, a more educated population can understand complicated documents better, laws, real estate papers, and when voting, it helps to understand the issues, so educated people can make more informed decisions, whether personal or public.
And then the third one is it would make me happy if people would look at Arkansas potential employers not just as a vast wasteland of near the bottom educated people, but look at those folks in Arkansas. They have beautiful land, they have lots of land, and they care about how educated their citizens are. So if I move my company there, I'm partnering with those folks in order to have a highly educated workforce.
There is a difference between connectivity and accessibility. Reyes says there are three barriers to accessibility.
Is there no connectivity because the end user doesn't have access to an internet connection, or they have access but they don't have the income to pay for it, or they may have access, the income, but they're not aware of the benefits? So it's about finding which one of these three is really the barrier and why we're not connected and when we look at national rankings.
It's different for everybody, and Reyes says that in some places it's a combination of the three. In some areas of Arkansas, say the Delta, where connectivity is low, awareness is low, and incomes are low, it is difficult to raise awareness as to how the internet could be a benefit. For many jobs in this day and age, you have to apply online. If you aren't connected, you don't even know the jobs are there. For Reyes, awareness is the biggest barrier.
It's about what is the benefit of having an email account. What is the awareness, or what is the benefit of having the awareness of how to navigate the internet? What is it for? So, when you see the kids now, even in the schools in the K-12 system, what they're learning, how they're learning, how they can in a day build a report from a painting that it's at the Louvre in Paris, and you can get a virtual tour of the Louvre online. That kind of creativity, it's opening their minds. And if we don't have that in our state, we keep falling behind and more and more and more. That We need to get that access. We need to make sure that people see what is the benefit. We need to raise awareness of how important that is to create the young minds and create the really the culture of having more innovation, more technology embedded in our everyday lives, so we can start really making the machinery run again at the speed that other states and other nations are running.
He says that it cannot be done with just universities. It needs to be a combination of the private sector and the public sector, and not just in higher education. The report card on American education from the American Legislative Exchange Council ranks Arkansas's public schools at 45th in the nation. Governor Mike Beebe sees the relation between connectivity and education, evidenced by the start of a task force, Faster Arkansas. Faster, fast access for students, teachers, and economic results. It's a group of business leaders, technical experts, and political experts trying to push forward broader and faster internet access in all of the public schools in Arkansas. Jerry Jones, an executive vice president with Axiom in Little Rock, is chair of the group.
It was our collective belief, certainly the belief of the governor, that even though Arkansas had gotten off to a good start back in 1992, it would fall in way behind. And it was time for us not just to catch up, but to get ahead. And so hence he asked me to bring this group together. We're meeting regularly. We're divided into various subcommittees. And hopefully by the end of this calendar year, we will have a set of very, very specific recommendations on the governor's desk that hopefully will be persuasive to him to go to the special session of the legislature that's primarily the financial session of the legislature in January and February and adopt whatever changes in Arkansas law need to be adopted to move forward.
Jones says Faster Arkansas is looking at the speeds and capacity levels that should be adopted by schools. He referenced a Cisco report that recommends in 5 years, students should have access to a 2 gigabyte per second capacity in order to have a functioning school. He says Arkansas can't do that initially. While there are some small rural districts with no broadband access at all, larger districts don't have sufficient capacity to support all of the needed online usage. Often, not everyone that needs on can get on. It will also be a problem when Common Core standards are enacted next year. Testing will be completed via the internet, and Arkansas will not be able to comply with the standards without more capacity. Faster will start with the schools, but want to make sure that what they do can be utilized by communities, which is where the ER in the name comes from, economic results.
Our strategy is, first, we're going to focus on the school districts and the school buildings, and we're going to make suggestions there, and we're going to try to drive some very, very rapid change there because we got to catch up. Coming in on top of that is, what can the state of Arkansas do to help make sure that the internet is ubiquitous, that you have access to the internet at a reasonable price? It's not going to be free, but at a reasonable price anywhere within the state of Arkansas. One of the benefits that we have in making this effort right now is that the cost of technology is going down instead of up in this respect when you think of the amount of accessibility and capacity. So this is the beginning of a longer term strategy. It's a continuum of efforts. We can't solve everything on day one, but hopefully we can start helping make the decisions that are necessary to have the proper guidelines, policy, and strategy.
Helping to get internet access to rural citizens is Ron Grigg of Deluxe Information Systems in Springdale. For 11 years, he has been providing broadband through links and towers around the region, sending out 2.5 gigahertz, which is higher than an AM-FM broadcast, from 65 locations such as Mount Kessler, Mount Sequoia, and Robinson Mountain, to about 700 customers who didn't have any other option for internet access.
It's too expensive for Cox or AT&T to run fiber or coax out into a low-density area. And so, they focus on towns and communities, but people that live off out, and I mean, I've got clients that are 5-10 miles away from my towers, and the primary requirement is to have a clear line of sight and be able to see the tower with the antenna they're connecting with. And so I'm not able to reach everybody, but anybody that's got a clear view to one of my tower locations has got the chance of getting some good broadband.
Companies charge customers that want access about $10 per foot of cable that needs to be laid. way out of the budget for most people. Grigg agrees that it is important for people to have access for education, work, and even safety.
Well, the biggest thing is school. You know, the school children have to have it anymore for doing their schoolwork, submitting schoolwork, getting their grades, communications between the parents and the teachers. A lot of people have started working from home to save all the driving. So there's a world of information there at your fingertips, and you can connect anywhere in the world.
Bringing internet to rural customers can be likened to events of 75 to 80 years ago, when homes that never had light were wired for electricity. Here's Dr. Miles and Dr. Reyes.
We did not think that electricity was a public good, and perhaps it's time to think about internet access as a public good.
And the truth is, sometimes we have to understand that the cost of making it available will not necessarily be paid by the kids who are getting access now. But once they're in, the benefit that society and that these areas will see in the coming years, it's what we have to figure out how to do it, how to make sure that we take the return on investment, the present value of that return on investment, and really cost it out today.
For Ozarks at Large, I'm Christina Thomas.
It is Tuesday, September 17th, 2013. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
With us, Becca Martin Brown, features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
What would you say if I told you that an inanimate object can have a heck of a life?
Yeah, I've got a pretty good imagination. I'll go with that.
Okay, well, imagine that it's a Mosler cannonball safe.
And it was at one time in Cane Hill?
It was indeed, and it's back home in Cane Hill.
It had quite a life.
It was manufactured between 1898 and 1902 by the Mosler Safe Company, which was founded in Cincinnati. In 1905, it was purchased by the Bank of Cane Hill, where it served faithfully until October 24th, 1917, when it was robbed.
And taken away.
Well, not then.
Okay. Oh, it was a different robbery when it was taken?
Well, it didn't get taken in the robbery.
I've never heard the story.
See? Just the innards were taken, like the money.
Right.
Apparently, two guys came on horseback. They rode away like they were farmers who had been transacting legal business and locked the guy who was running the bank in the vault. Mm-hmm. He got out because he kept tools inside and he took the hinges off.
Smart man.
The bank closed in 1922 after it was purchased by the Bank of Lincoln. And the safe ended up at the Greenway General Store near Fort Smith. In 1980, the store went out of business and the safe was purchased at auction by a guy named P.U. Dennison and went off to Piggott.
Okay. It still hasn't left Arkansas.
No. He restored it, nice, pretty, and working inside and out. And then the story gets convoluted because Ed Marshall, who's president of the Cane Hill Restoration Association, wanted to get it back. And Dennison wanted to send it home, and there were legal issues, and there were transportation issues, and there were custody issues. And finally, it wound up back in the Cane Hill College building, mm-hmm. locked.
Well, it's a safe.
Well, and Ed Marshall had both the combination and instructions, and he couldn't get it open. So they finally got somebody to come from the Mosler Safe Company and open the safe. And Geraldo was not there.
I bit my tongue. I was going to ask if it was Geraldo Rivera.
No, Geraldo was not there. But the safe will be open for the Harvest Festival this coming weekend in an effort to draw attention to Cane Hill and the Cane Hill history and all of that. It's something new, and they're hoping to save money to restore the mill and the mill wheel, which had its own adventure when there was a big rain and two great big rocks came down the stream and really did a number on it.
For a small town, Cane Hill's had a lot of history.
The excitement starts at 7 o'clock with a country breakfast on Saturday and Sunday. Most of it's free. There's going to be a quilt show, a demonstration of how to make hominy, which I don't believe I've ever seen, kids' games, crafts, a Civil War reenactors encampment, and, of course, the infamous safe.
There you go. Boy, a lot happening at Cane Hill.
Thank you, Becca. Becca Martin Brown is features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
He had successfully disposed of the media and was now placing chicken fried steak, mashed potatoes, and gravy on his tray.
He sauntered over, grabbed the harness, and with his face about 2 inches from mine, nodded and said, "Just relax."
What people don't know about Gertie is she has a thing for bald men. When I meet her coming down the hall, I always pause and tilt for a moment.
Tales from the South, Saturday afternoon at 3:30 on KUAF.
Several years ago, Carroll County's Quorum Court passed an ordinance to construct a rural public water system, the only county in the region without one. Within months, voters repealed the ordinance, with opponents claiming it had been pushed by a minority of developers. The Quorum Court has taken the matter up once again, but as Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich reports, it hopes to prove a majority of residents want it.
Hundreds of Coldwater Springs, which feed the Kings River and Leatherwood Creek, course through Carroll County. Yet water remains an issue for many, says Ron Flake, Carroll County Quorum Court Justice of the Peace, Berryville.
Most of us out here get by on wells, and some of the wells are very old, and with the last three-plus years of drought and water shortages, we've had a lot of wells fail, and we've got a real water problem for the rural parts of this county.
Berryville, Eureka Springs, and Green Forest tap onto the Carroll Boone Water District pipeline, which draws from Beaver Lake. 3 years ago, a group of Berryville developers and business owners wanted to bring water to their properties, so registered a Carroll County Rural Water Association with the state. They soon convinced the County Quorum Court to pass an ordinance to construct a county-wide rural water system administered by a public facilities board. But opponents, primarily from the Eureka Springs area, drummed up a special election, and in February of 2011, nearly 1,300 residents voted to repeal the ordinance, with 869 voting in favor. Quorum Court JP Ron Flake blames the weather. The conditions were snowy and icy, but also blames a minority of activists and county reporters for killing the project.
It was fairly cleverly and carefully orchestrated by some journalists and some people that are against growth in the county.
Opponents claim the new Rural Water Public Facilities Board would be run by special interests, operate autonomous of state and local government control, and not have to submit to financial audit. But members of the Quorum Court Water Committee have not given up and are revising the old ordinance to bring rural water before voters again, this time during the November 2014 election.
We cannot have the county run the board, but we can have some say in the succession on the board. The board will be comprised of members of the water system, and they will be elected by the members and users of the system. And the board will actually control the prices.
Ron Flake says the Quorum Court's not interested in establishing a county-run public water authority because the bureaucracy is too large and complex for the Quorum Court to manage, nor would a water improvement district work, which is too small and privately controlled. But an independent public facilities board could work with the Arkansas Natural Resources Commission to secure state and federal grants and loans and be liable for any risk.
We would buy water out of Beaver Lake through the Carroll Boone system and contract with the cities to connect onto their mains and go out into the county, spider webbing off of the systems that Berryville, Green Forest, hopefully Eureka, have. That use Carroll Boone water.
All construction would have to be permitted and comply with state and federal environmental laws. Ron Flake said no county wells would be condemned, nor would participation be forced. He says the committee will model their system after Madison County's Water Facilities Board, established in 2001, but he failed to cite any cost figures. So he called manager Rodney Reynolds. He said their average household tap fees around $800 plus plumbing inspection fees. Minimum monthly bills range from $30 to $50, depending upon terrain. He said 3,600 customers have purchased rural water over the past decade. He also said their board has been constructing the system slowly, section by section, to avoid large debt. As for the taking of private land in Carroll County to construct a water pipeline network, again, J.P. Ron Flake.
I foresee using existing rights of way along the county roads as much as possible.
But there's no question a massive water pipeline would have to cross lots of private property.
Public utility, and this would be considered a public utility, eminent domain goes with the territory.
Ron Flake's Quorum Court colleague, Lamont Ritchie, a JP from Eureka Springs, voted against the project in 2011. but based on concepts now being considered by the Quorum Court's Water Committee, of which he's been a member, Ritchie may be changing his mind.
And the consensus among the committee members has been that in terms of the ability for the county to have some continuing oversight, that the Public Facilities Board really does offer the most protection for people.
In the original ordinance, the Public Facilities Board would not have to place projects under $20,000 out to bid. That will change as well, he said.
If that exception cannot be overcome in whatever ordinance that the Quorum Court would come up with, then that would be a serious defect, because that's also a major concern of mine. I think that those involved in working with the Water Committee are making a real effort to be more transparent and upfront with the evaluation, number one, for the need for a rural water system, and number two, the best vehicle be used for providing rural water.
Of Carroll County's 28,000 residents, half rely on private wells. And Lamont Ritchie says requests for rural water are increasing. So Carroll County Quorum Court will draft a new and improved ordinance, he said, collect data, and educate the public to support its case for rural water in advance of the 2014 November elections. As for the Berryville business interests that initially pushed the county to bring public water to their projects, they ended up building their own private water company. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
More information is available by contacting the Carroll County Agriculture Extension Office in Berryville at 870-423-2958.
This is Ozarks at Large for a Tuesday. I'm Kyle Kellums.
Mance Winnecker-Hayda.
Some notes to catch up on from the weekend. The Arkansas soccer team now 7-1. They had been one of the last undefeated teams in the country. They dropped a match to TCU in double overtime Sunday afternoon. I know. Arkansas still ranked 25th in the nation. They'll open SEC play in Fayetteville Friday night at 7 against Mississippi.
The Razorback volleyball team improved to 6-3 this weekend, capturing the Golden Hurricane Classic Championship in the process. Arkansas won 2 of 3 matches in Tulsa during the tournament.
And the number 7 Arkansas men's golf team finished 4th at this weekend's Fighting Illini Invitational in Olympia Fields, Illinois. Arkansas finished behind Alabama, Texas, and Oklahoma State. Those are the teams that are ranked 1st, 2nd, and 8th in the nation, respectively.
Well, congratulations to all of the local athletes.
Yes.
Former Razorback football coach Lou Holtz will address a joint luncheon of the Northwest Arkansas Touchdown Club and the Springdale Rotary Club next Monday. The event is open to the public and will be hosted by Bo Mattingly, who's host of the radio show Sports Talk with Bo Mattingly. Holtz coached at the University of Arkansas from 1977 to 1983. He is retired from coaching, but is currently a football analyst for ESPN, an author, and inspirational speaker. He was elected to the College Football Hall of Fame in 2008. The luncheon will begin at 11:30 a.m. at the Holiday Inn Convention Center in Springdale. Tickets are still available, but must be purchased by September 18th, so
tomorrow.
So, quick reminder, everybody.
Yeah.
Tickets may be reserved through Springdale Rotary Club, through the Touchdown Club at nwatdclubporter.com. And you can find out more information at those places. And a reminder, tickets by tomorrow.
By tomorrow. One more sports note from this weekend. The Arkansas Razorback hockey team, a club sport, opened with 2 wins.
Good for them.
At Jones Center, yeah. 16 organizations from throughout Arkansas have received the Arkansas Governor's Quality Awards. They were presented by Grant Tenniel, Executive Director of the Arkansas Economic Development Commission, during the 19th annual award celebration for the Governor's Quality Award Program last night in downtown Little Rock. Veterans Healthcare System of the Ozarks in Fayetteville took top honors in receiving the Governor's Award for Performance Excellence. The Achievement Level Award was presented to JV Manufacturing Incorporated of Springdale. One of the organizations receiving the Commitment Level Award was North Arkansas College in Harrison. The goal of the program is to encourage Arkansas organizations to engage in continuous quality improvement, which leads to performance excellence, and to provide significant recognition to those organizations. The Governor's Quality Award Program partners with the Arkansas State Chamber of Commerce.
Also want to offer congratulations to Mike Johnson, Associate Vice Chancellor for Facilities at the University of Arkansas. He received the Meritorious Service Award Board. During the annual convention of APPA, Leadership in Education, the International Professional Organization previously known as the Association of Physical Plant Administrators. This award is the group's highest award for individual service and is presented in recognition of outstanding contributions to the recipient's institution, the profession, and the association. Johnson became the head of U of A Facilities Management in March of 2004 and has supervised the largest and longest construction campaign in university history. The combined renovation, restoration, and new construction projects have totaled more than $1 billion in value while meeting the needs of a rapidly growing student population. Under his leadership, facilities management has placed an increased emphasis on sustainability in everything from recycling to energy-saving modernization projects to construction projects designed to earn LEED certification.
Do we have time for just a few reminders?
I think so.
All right. The Fayetteville Public Library will be an enrollment location for the American Cancer Society's Cancer Prevention Study 3 from 2 until 6:30 tomorrow. If you'd like any more information, you can go to cps3nwark.org. cps3nwark.org.
Siloam Springs is offering a free event about preparedness and weather. It's called City Safe, and it will take place at 6 o'clock September 19th in the high school seminar room.
And Tim Hale, the Senior Vice President of Design Management and Marketing at Fossil Incorporated, will speak on the University of Arkansas campus 5:30 Thursday evening in room 213 of the Fine Arts Center. He's one of the original designers for Fossil Startup in suburban Dallas in the 1980s and was instrumental in setting up the in-house design team that created the early vintage posters and 10 packages that helped establish Fossil's image. That's Thursday night at 5:30.
KUAF is supported by the Walmart Visitor Center Museum. This newly remodeled and expanded center is family-friendly and features two interactive galleries, plus the Walton's Five and Dime 1950-style soda fountain, located on the square in downtown Bentonville and opened daily until 9 p.m. 277-8493 or Facebook/Walmart Visitor Center Museum for more information. Walton Art Center presents On the Union Friday, October 4th, as part of the 10x10 Art Series. These musicians will travel across the globe to perform traditional folk music from Inner Mongolia, including throat singing and unusual instruments. Tickets and more information are available at waltonartcenter.org or 443-5600.
A new collection of information about Arkansas music is on some store shelves this month. The Encyclopedia of Arkansas Music is an outgrowth of the online Encyclopedia of Arkansas History and Culture, which is, in turn, a project of the Butler Center for Arkansas Studies at the Central Arkansas Library System in Little Rock. The new book includes entries on the most famous Arkansas musicians, Johnny Cash, Levon Helm, Louis Jordan, and Sister Rosetta Tharpe included, but also on some of the lesser-known but still important musicians with Arkansas ties.
Like Narvel Felt.
That's Mike Keycaver, one of the editors of the Encyclopedia, and this is Narvel Felt.
Hello, baby. Yes, it's really me.
If you read the entry on Narvel Felt in the Encyclopedia of Arkansas Music, you know that he was born in Keyser, Arkansas, and between 1973 and 1979, he had more than 20 top 40 hits on the Billboard country charts. But musicians who never got near a Billboard chart are also included, according to the book's other editor, Allie Welke.
We have an entry on the eccentric street musicians that were seen around Little Rock a lot in the 80s, Elton and Betty White. A lot of people in the Little Rock area are very familiar with them. They were on, I don't know, David Letterman and some other shows and were very popular around here. Also, we have an entry on psychobilly musician Tav Falco of Gurdon.
Hey, high school baby.
Little
have one on a fiddle maker, Violet Brumley Hensley. She's born near Mount Ida, and she's known as the Stradivarius of the Ozarks for her fiddle making, and she's an Arkansas living treasure. So we've really covered a lot of areas of Arkansas music, not just the big names, although the big names are there too.
Allie and Michael say they use the already existing online encyclopedia of Arkansas history and culture as a springboard, then filled in whatever gaps they thought there might be. Certainly, the same criteria used to vet entries for the online collection were used for the book. There must be a strong Arkansas connection and a strong influence in a particular field of music.
Which means they've recorded or done some really significant things. So there are lots of musicians that have done a lot but maybe aren't in the book, at least not this time, but maybe we'll update it later on with and add some more names of people who are doing some great stuff right now.
And if they don't have a particular entry, they might appear in the lengthy overviews of each genre that occur in the beginning of the book. And then the first entry, the longest one in the book, is an overview of all music in Arkansas, musicians, genres, venues.
One of the advantages of the physical edition of the Encyclopedia of Arkansas Music is the ability to have random discovery. For example, if you had already heard of Bob Burns, of Van Buren, and the musical instrument he invented called the bazooka, you could note ahead to the online encyclopedia to learn more. But say you'd never heard of Bob Burns and the bazooka. You could buy the paperback Encyclopedia of Arkansas Music and, for the first time ever, learn about the man who rose to fame as a movie star, radio star, and newspaper columnist in the 1930s and 40s. He also created a low-registered instrument called the bazooka using two gas pipes and a whiskey funnel. You can hear it here in a performance with singer Shirley Ross from an episode of the Army-Navy Screen Magazine.
Oh, my darling, oh, my darling, oh, my darling Clementine, you are lost and gone forever, awful sorry Clementine.
By the way, the naming of the high-powered World War II era weapon of the same name, inspired by Burns' instrument's appearance.
Yeah, and it's nice, too, because then you can look at it in the book, and then if you want to know more about Bob Burns or, you know, places, you know, where he's from and what other musicians he played with, things like that, then you can also use the book in concert with the online encyclopedia and just delve deeper and deeper and find out more and more.
There is an entry, too, about Louis Thomas Moondog Hardin, a musician and composer who grew up around Batesville. He had a song recorded by Janis Joplin when she was part of the Big Brother and the Holding Company. Later successfully sued legendary DJ Alan Freed, arranged an album of nursery rhymes with Julie Andrews, played music with Philip Glass and Charles Mingus, and became known in Manhattan as the guy who dressed up like a Viking in Times Square. And there are entries in the Encyclopedia of living musicians, too, like the legendary Sleepy LaBeef. Sleepy was born in southern Arkansas, but has lived in northwest Arkansas for years. Beloved in the United States, Europe, Japan, and elsewhere, he's been called the human jukebox for his uncanny ability to play almost any song from memory.
He performed at last year's Arkansas Sounds Music Festival, and that picture on the cover, in fact, was taken at that performance.
Yeah, I actually wrote that entry in the encyclopedia, so that was a fun one. And then to find out that he had... I think he's, 6'6" and 270 pounds or something.
Big boss man, can't you hear me when I call? Big boss man. We'll be right back.
Sleepy was born in Norflet, Arkansas, and there might be a few people unsure of just where Norflet is. So the Arkansas Encyclopedia of Music comes with a map.
You know, we're focused on Arkansas, and so we talk about so many different place names and things like that that I thought, well, you know, not everybody might be familiar with all of these towns and counties and everything that we mentioned, so so we really wanted to do that musical map, and Mike here designed that and did a great job, and we even were able to put the rock and roll highway on there that goes up through northeast Arkansas.
The encyclopedia's entries are not just individuals. There is an entry for Clips Auto Technologies and Hope, one of the leading high-end speaker companies in the country, and certain events have their own recognition as well.
People talk about the stopover of the Beatles in Walnut Ridge, which fueled Beatlemania in Arkansas.
And that infamous traffic stop and subsequent arrest of some of the members of the Rolling Stones is included as well.
That's another event that has been exhaustively covered by, I think, the Arkansas media, and yes, we have an entry on that as well.
And they can look at the map and see where Dallas County is, where that happened in 1975.
Much like rock and roll, modern country music, bluegrass, and rap can be linked to music from decades before, the editors of the encyclopedia say their book exists primarily because of generations of music writers, enthusiasts, and scholars.
Mike and I did not write this book. We compiled it from entries written by nearly 100 different contributors to the online encyclopedia. So, and then, you know, those people that write those entries, their research uses the scholarship of lots of other people who have done music history research. So it's really a group effort, and we're proud to bring together kind of a community of experts in Arkansas musical history all in one place that people can read and enjoy.
So we'll share the glory with 97 other great writers.
That's right.
Allie Welker and Mike Keycaver are the editors of the Encyclopedia of Arkansas Music, published by the Butler Center for Arkansas Studies at the Central Arkansas Library System in Little Rock. The book is available online at sites including the University of Arkansas Press website, uapress.com, as well as other online book retailers. It's also available at the River Market Books and Gift Store in Little Rock. And there will be a cocktail party Thursday night at 5:30 to formally celebrate the release of the book. That party takes place at the main library, the Central Arkansas Library System in Little Rock, appropriately enough, at 100 Rock Street in Little Rock. This is Ozarks at Large.
Ozarks at Large is underwritten in part by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation. Ozarks at Large is supported by the Center for Arkansas and Regional Studies at the University of Arkansas in Fayetteville, dedicated to the celebration and documentation of this region's history and culture.
This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Rogers, Oak Hill.
Where's Oak Hill?
Well, funny you should ask, because there are two Oak Hills. There's
oh.
Oak Hill, mm-hmm. two words, in Carroll County on Highway 23.
Mm-hmm.
Then a few miles north, same highway, there's Oak Hill, Missouri, one word.
Oh.
I don't know the story, why.
Well, maybe we should find out.
I think we should.
Okay.
Put that on the list.
We will. Have a good weekend?
Yes, yes. Did a lot, slept a little,
mm-hmm.
you know. That sort of
sounds
weekend.
Good.
Yes. Tried to capture a raccoon on the roof.
Oh, good.
Didn't get it, but we're fixing the roof.
Okay.
You?
Sounds like a plan. It was good. Went rock climbing for a friend's 30th birthday. Happy birthday, Lauren. And it was a lot of fun. I'd never been rock climbing, and I always wanted to go, so I had a lot of fun out at Horseshoe Canyon.
You had the ropes and everything. You didn't freestyle, right?
Freestyle. It's called bouldering if you don't have the ropes, as I learned.
As I don't know, yes.
But no, we had ropes. That was my first time, so definitely ropes.
Okay,
maybe no
good.
Ropes next time.
No.
I
Not yet.
I can do what I want, sir.
Yeah, I know.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
I'm Kyle Kellums.
Have a fantastic Tuesday.